I want everybody to stand up if you're able. And I want you to look around at each other. And if you've got the nerve, I want you to make eye contact with somebody you don't know. Okay. Good job. You can sit back down. The reason I wanted you to do that is because 2 weeks ago, I told you that the Ministerial Discretion Fund had run out of money. And this is the fund that we use to help people who are in financial crisis. And one of you gave a $10 gift to the Ministerial Discretion Fund. And I really appreciate that. And one of you gave $50, and one of you gave $100, and one of you gave $200, and one of you gave $1,000. And the Discretion Fund is brought back to life by those gifts. And the reason I wanted you to look at each other is because in all probability, somebody in this room saw the person who gave the $10. I happen to know for a fact that the person who gave the $1,000 is not here this morning, so you weren't able to see that person. But I want you to know who we are to each other. I want you to think about those joys and sorrows that were just read. I want you to think about the way your own hearts were tugged at hearing some of that news. And even though we don't know, I personally don't know that family who lost a 13-year-old daughter this week. I cannot imagine the pain that they're going through. David, having gone through a divorce, I know exactly what pain you're going through. And I am so sorry. But just feel it for just a second. Feel who we are to each other. After Sally Surratt's extraordinary sermon last Sunday, Bill Schulz said to me, "There are people who are going to keep you on your toes." I can't imagine a more challenging topic for keeping me on my toes than the one we're looking at this morning. Mental illness and mental health are not mutually exclusive. Health and illness, as is true of physical health and illness, exist along they exist along a continuum. In his brilliant novel, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, Tom Robbins offers that there are two kinds of mentally ill people. There are those whose brain chemistry is simply altered by circumstances beyond their control. But there is a second group who choose to be mentally ill out of a desperate conviction that the world itself is insane. And mental illness is their last sanctuary. One of Robbins' characters offers that the first group is within the scope of medical care, while the second is not. Dr. Goldman, the psychiatrist in the novel, says, "I've found that there's nothing I can do for these people, because the only way you can get them to give up their craziness is to convince them that the world is sane. And I have found that an impossible conviction to support." Even as I was preparing this sermon, I received an email from a member of this congregation saying that someone in his family had been hospitalized for depression. And he added in his email, "Please don't tell anybody." The year is 2015. We feel very modern and progressive in so many ways, and yet the note still reads, "Please don't tell anybody." I have a daughter who's been treated for depression. Yet there is something in me that cringes to mention it here. In this room, at this moment, as we seek to destigmatize mental illness and create more of an openness to mentally ill people being treated, well treated, affirmed in their walks, uplifted in their spirits, and given every opportunity the rest of us are given. Hillary Clinton said Wednesday night that her dream is that every American will have the same opportunities that she and her husband have had. That might be a bit of a stretch, but it does feel like a reasonable dream that every American could have a decent place to live, a nutritious diet, basic access to health care and public transportation, education, and meaningful work. And that dream should apply to those who are under a doctor's care for mental illness. Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland Wednesday night, mentioned the mentally ill over and over again. Poor care for the mentally ill, the stigma of mental illness, somehow being shameful, the fact that many of the inmates in our prisons are there because of mental illness and getting absolutely no treatment. These are all scandals and great sadnesses and wrong, baby, wrong. But just as we struggled 2 weeks ago with the issue of income inequality, we can beat our chests and tear our hair over mental illness and not get very far. I looked at the UUA website and found a statement on honoring persons with mental illness. It was adopted in 2011. Let me read it to you. Our faith calls us to regard each precious human being with inherent worth and dignity. Our mutual goal is to see inner beauty in every face, the holy in every spirit, and to accept people as they are, in their infinite diversity, whether or not their inherent differences are stereotyped and discriminated against elsewhere. We look toward each other as having gifts to offer, inner strength, valued life experiences, and the capacity to grow. End of quote. I wonder, and maybe I'm wrong about this, isn't this who we already are? Or at our worst, is it not who we are striving to be? And who we are embarrassed to admit we sometimes fail to be. How would we dare stigmatize mental illness as somehow shameful any more than we would shame a child for running across a field, stepping in a hole, and spraining her ankle? Maybe the real question we need to answer this morning is, how dare we shame anybody for anything? Who do we think we are? This is a political season. And yes, by God, we feel perfectly justified in demonizing those people whose bumper stickers don't look like ours. Please hear my confession. I really do struggle with some of those bumper stickers. Sometimes I want to roll my window down at a red light and look over and say, "Are you serious? Really?" And I get particularly smug and self-righteous if one of those people happens to be smoking a cigarette. But how can we aspire to see inner beauty in every face, even the mentally ill and their families, to accept people exactly as they are? No, we don't do it, and we need to change. That's something we can all work on. We may not be able to fix it, but we can relax our judgmental, picky, nitpicking condemnation of other people and ourselves. What? Would you say that again, preacher man? Yes, I will. We may not be able to fix it, but we can relax our judgmental, picky, nitpicking condemnation of other people and ourselves. That's where it has to start. Yes, some of us are under a doctor's care for mental illness. Should we be ashamed of that? Should we hide it? How do we talk about it without judgment? When I told you a few minutes ago that I have a daughter who was treated for depression, did you wonder whether I had abused her or yelled at her or made fun of her during potty training? Should I be ashamed to tell you today that I have a daughter who's been treated for depression? How does this work? How do we swim out of this quagmire we just swam into? I don't know. It's absolutely wonderful that the UUA adopted a statement on seeing the beauty in every face and accepting people exactly as they are. But it just got a little squirmy. It just got a little uncomfortable when the guy down front, who is supposed to be the spiritual leader of our community, confesses that his daughter was treated for depression. And did I ever yell at her? Yes. Don't minimize this. This is how this works. Am I embarrassed that I yelled at her? Yes. Do I wish I had not ever yelled at her? Yes. Now just sit with this. Just sit with this. Remember, we are all in this together. You've got stuff in your past that makes you very, very happy right now that I'm talking about me and not talking about you. Some of you are thinking, I'm so glad he never goes past 12 o'clock. Just sit with it for a minute. Nobody gets out of this world without breaking some glass. And if we live long enough, we break a few hearts too. It's terrible. And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry I ever yelled at my daughter. I'm not ashamed that she was treated for depression, but I am ashamed that I ever yelled at her and her sister and her brothers and both of my ex-wives and anybody I ever cared about. And I'm very sorry and brokenhearted that anybody ever thought it was okay to yell at me. You guys know I love you, and I want the best for you. Please be cautious of judging anybody, even people who smoke cigarettes and put those awful bumper stickers on their cars. Marshall Rosenberg argues that the source of all anger is a need that isn't met. By the way, our Marshall Rosenberg group is meeting again Thursday night at 6:30. We'd love to have anybody come. He also believes that through nonviolent communication, we can begin to create a world where everybody's needs are met. That's what the mentally ill and their families need. Locally, we have a chapter of NAMI, the National Association for the Mentally Ill. This is a group for families and patients. It has a long and storied history of being there for folks who have suffered the pain and confusion of mental illness and the stigmas. Let's make it our business to offer what aid we can through groups like NAMI and through searching our souls for the shards of glass that may still be stuck in our own pasts and fears and behaviors. You all, some of you have heard me speak enough to know that I believe love is all there is. The Beatles were right. All you need is love. Love is all there is. Love is all there is. But judgment and love are a tough mix. Not all judgment is unloving. But we must be very careful as we seek to direct those around us even in the thoughts we think. This is where stigmas begin, in our thoughts. Our thoughts are very powerful. In Carol K. Anthony's translation of the I Ching, she writes, "It is said that the slightest wave of the hand moves molecules all the way to the other end of the universe. It is also true that the slightest change in our inner attitudes affects those to whom we are connected, however far away they may be. Should we not then be very careful of our innermost thoughts?" Innermost thoughts are so powerful. They shape our directions, our journeys, as Sally Surratt pointed out so well last Sunday. They wake us up in the morning. They're the last things on our mind as we drift off to sleep at night. Is it too much to ask that we be careful of our innermost thoughts? Mental illness and mental health lie along a spectrum. They are not mutually exclusive. All of us have broken glass. Long before I stigmatized the glass in someone else's skin, I will remember the shards that are still stuck in my own skin. I've said it many times, but I'll say it again. What we do here is so important. What we do here is so important. This place is quite literally a sanctuary from a world that expects us to keep our problems to ourselves. Here we come with our illnesses and we ask for love and support. You cannot know the man whose son is in the hospital being treated for depression. But here in this place, you can take just a moment to believe with him that his son will manage his depression successfully once he leaves that hospital. Here in this place, we hold each other, sometimes in hugs, sometimes in eye contact. I know that even that is hard for some of us. Here in this place, we give up old bad habits and learn new ways to walk and talk and think and believe together. Here in this place, we can become one with the air we breathe and the stories we hear of each other's joys and concerns. Do not minimize this, folks. We are the daughters and sons of a great tradition that has changed the world. Dare this morning to speak to someone you don't know, to reach beyond the old familiar friendships. Offer a hug or eye contact. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. Gene Blank has asked that if you're not involved with unleavening the trailer, that you move very quickly back to the fellowship hall to leave the lobby and the front hall open for moving furniture after the service. And may the peace of 1,000 angels be with you all.